Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have just convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development on May the 13th, 2015. We are gathered today for the purpose of a work session on Oregon Business Development Department seeking a federal STEP grant application and also a public hearing on Senate Bill 306A that has to do with levy infrastructure. And Mr. Bender, if you would set us up for the first item, which will be the grant application. Yeah. And with that, I'll open the work session. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair and Subcommittee members, your first item on the agenda today is a work session on a federal grant application by the Oregon Business Development Department. This is for a federal STEP grant. STEP is an acronym for State Trade and Export Promotion Program. The agency would like to apply for $450,000 from the Small Business Administration for a grant that would assist state export programs that provide assistances to small businesses. And they're here to speak about that.
Good afternoon, panel. And I am agnostic as to the batting order, so.
Well, I'll start, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Evo Tremmer, Legislative Affairs Manager for the Oregon Business Development Department, or Business Oregon for short. Briefly, we're here to ask for the legislative permission to apply for the fourth year of a federal grant that we've already administered the first 3 years. In fact, the third year, we were one of only 20 states who got it. The first couple of years, every state that applied got something, but the money kept shrinking, so we were very proud to get one of 20 grants there. In year three, we are currently administering it. With me is Samantha Julian, Assistant Director for Business Development, who oversees the export promotion activities of the department. I'll just get us started and then hand it over. Briefly, you might recall from our first budget presentation a couple of the highlight numbers. I want to remind you of one number that's actually not on the screen. That's 95%. 95% of the world's consumers live outside the United States. This is an effort of connecting Oregon companies with that consumer base in different countries. You see the number of jobs that are supported by international businesses or export-related activities in Oregon here and the number of companies. I'm going to skip over a few of these just to kind of keep you on time.
Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Samantha Julian with Business Oregon, Assistant Director of Business Development. This slide here is an example of a company. We wanted to give you an idea of the types of companies that we're able to help that apply for and receive these grants. They are typically small and medium-sized manufacturers. This particular company is in Central Oregon and manufactures safety gear for climbing. The next company is a boat manufacturer.
Madam Chair, can we go back a slide?
Yes, please.
Where's the safety gear?
Well, it's a rope right there.
I believe
on the
rope
person.
Is, the rope is right there.
Sorry, it's so small.
All right, just checking. Thank you.
Great question. The next one, boat manufacturer. This is a great one. They are manufacturing to Canada, which is the U.S.'s number one trade partner and Oregon's second largest trade partner in Canada. This is the last example. This is a product that helps in the metal fabrication industry. So it's a manufacturer that helps the manufacturing industry, which is obviously high-wage jobs. Talking about some of the actual pieces to the grant, this is modeled very much after Oregon's state program, which is the Oregon Trade Promotion Program, or some people know as OTTP. The STEP initiative has two areas of objectives, to help small companies export who are new to exporting, as well as companies that are existing exporters to do more. Nationwide, the results of the STEP program are very strong. Awardees in the first 2 years reported to the SBA that they had a 7-to-1 ROI in the first 2 years. So if you see this, it's either $5,000 or a 50% match, whichever is less, and to have an average of 17-to-1 is pretty impressive nationwide. So this is not just transactional. That's one of the points I want to make today. It's not just about giving money to companies to export, but we also provide other services from our staff to help with things like strategy, marketing campaigns, which countries to go in, which products to export. So it's very much a hand-holding effort. The STEP grant just helps leverage our expertise in our office and get companies to move forward.
Ms. Julie? I have a question. Marketing to the Asian Rim has become a very popular concept for all of the reasons that you are laying out. Do you give any technical assistance to companies who are operating outside of your agency guidance? My point is that I have encountered in my constituent work some folks that are more or less competent in helping Oregon businesses get into the China market, which is a very complex introduction and relationship building. And I'm just trying to figure out, because one of my constituents has had a deal go very, very badly, resulted in money being transferred, and it's gone. And I'm just trying to figure out, do you make any attempt to let Oregon companies outside of the small circle that's aware of this kind of marketing initiative from a state agency, do you do anything about avoiding fraudulent actors in this arena, or make it known to companies that if you are not pretty expert, that China getting established in a trade relationship with China is fraught with difficulties?
Maybe I'll take a stab at this, Senator. Yes, we do. Actually, we take, for example, we have World Trade Week starting next week. It's been going on for a number of years now, where we bring our consultants in from other places, including China, for example, and we take them around the state. Last year, we took the consultant on our retainer contract in China. We Portland market, obviously, Salem market, and then over to Central Oregon, and we worked with the business chambers or economic development organizations to turn out companies. In that particular topic is always a topic of interest for all sites, us included. The federal government comes along with us. The export assistance centers come with us. So we all have an interest in educating, I think, companies about the dangers out there. A lot of time we hear about these particular things after the fact, and then all we can really do is refer to appropriate places within the federal government or in we certainly have a list of law firms that are active in both the United States and, say, Shanghai, for that example. But after that, the cleanup, if you will, lies with the legal authorities.
Thank you.
So this slide presents a little bit about eligibility. People wonder a little bit about that. Most of our clients in Oregon are very, very small. They're going to be 10 or less in a company. So you can see here that activity has to be international, has to be pre-approved, and they actually have to report results to us. So we want to know, did they make sales with their activity? We track that for a six-month period to see if there's some after sales to follow up. Here's some results for you. This indicates, obviously, more funding means we're able to help more Oregon companies with their sales. And this is a reflection of the global economy, meaning that we're coming out of a recession. It's a great time to apply for this year four. Year one, we had 69 companies that we helped, 78 grants. Year two, we had 87 companies and 95 grants. We're in year three, so we're in progress, and we've helped so far 42 companies, and that was 46 grants. So the year ends for us in September. This map gives you an idea of where the grants come from, or the companies come from to receive the grants. This is year one you're looking at right now. You'll notice that Eastern Oregon doesn't have as many, and that is the fact, as you know, that most of those working in that area are in the agricultural area.
How about any?
They're mostly in the agricultural area, like food processing. They receive funds from the federal government in different ways.
Let me qualify that a little bit. I shouldn't call them buckets of money, but there's lots more money for agricultural-related exports out there from the federal government than we can provide. USADA can go up, the grants there can go up to almost $300,000, I think, for an export activity. The buy-in for the company is much higher, so sometimes a winery or lots of wineries will come to us because it's easier to get our grant and it's a short investment to go to a particular trade show. But for a lot of the bigger players that you would assume would come from that region, there are other sources that just are it's more significant amounts of money and support.
This is year two, results for year two, showing where they came from, participants, firms that exported and had sales. Year three, of course, we're in year three, so this is where we are so far. This is the companies that have applied so far in our pipeline.
And I presume you're going to have more requests than you will ability to respond. Are there an objective set of criteria that give everybody the sense they've had a level playing field to apply in?
Yeah, there are certain criteria that they have to meet. They have to self-certify that they are small and medium-sized business according to the SBA criteria. That's a self-certification. They have to certify that they don't owe any money to the federal government in any form. Again, that's a self-certification. They have to be profitable. They have to be Oregon-based for our set of criteria. So there's a certain amount of company that where the applicants are kind of self-narrow themselves down. After that, we do look, the global trade specialists will look at experience and capabilities, basically, as the assessment. You know, will you be able to, if we help you go to China, will you be able to go again and again and again? It's not that one sales trip that we can help you go to a trade show. It's the commitment over long term that you will follow up.
I hope you would add the dear old state of Oregon. I've just come from a hearing on the Department of Revenue and their inability to collect outstanding tax obligations. It would just warm my heart if one of the criteria was that you had no outstanding obligations to the state of Oregon as well.
Senator, we looked into that as making that one of the things. The problem is that we can't verify that information. There's a problem with the data flow, if you will. So we can make them self-certify that, but we can't actually look at that.
Okay, now you've really opened a bucket of worms.
I know. I shouldn't have. But no.
You don't have that many companies. What's wrong with calling up the head of the agency and saying, what's the status with XYZ taxpayer? They're applying for a significant state grant. Are they okay?
We could certainly consider adding that to him.
I'll give you his phone number.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
I think we just hear Q&A and if any questions.
Colleagues, any questions of the agency? Okay, Mr. Bender.
Madam Co-Chair and subcommittee members, I note that in OLIS we have uploaded as well our analysis of the grant request. From that analysis, I'll remind you that what the request actually is to approve the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Small Business Administration in the amount of $450,000 for funds available under the State Trade and Export Promotion Program. The Legislative Fiscal Office does recommend that you approve the request. A couple points that we noted here is that there is a match requirement of $150,000 in lottery funds, or I'm sorry, in state funds, and that the agency will use $150,000 that is in the current service level budget for the Oregon Trade Promotion Program, which is essentially the state side of these same activities, to meet that match. The agency will be able to meet the match without taking resources or personnel away from other programs. There are no continuing requirements for the agency to maintain any programs or expenditure levels after the expiration of the federal grant. So for those reasons, we do recommend that you approve the request.
Okay. And we hear from the Office of the Chief Financial Officer.
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, for the record, Dustin Ball with the Chief Financial Office, and we support the LFO recommendation and recommend that you approve the request.
Thank you, Mr. Ball. Colleagues, any questions? Co-Chair Gomper?
Co-Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? All right. We need carriers?
Just one carrier to full committee.
Just one carrier. Any volunteers?
The
guy with no spots in his district is going to selflessly come forward and carry this.
I'll carry it for them if sometime they'll carry something for me.
It might be useful, actually, to get a point of coordination with the Department of Ag, because I know that the Department of Ag is marketing onions and cheese,
yes,
and
yes,
wines and other products indigenous to Senator Hansel's district.
No, Senator, we very closely cooperate with our colleagues at the Department of Agriculture. In fact, I'd like to mention next week we are taking one of our consultants to Pendleton. to do their kind of sit down with companies and interested parties and economic development officers, I think, a couple of stops in that district.
Might I recommend the export opportunities with a certain whiskey that has a bucking block on it?
If we have enough to share.
With that, we're going to close the work session on the OBDD federal STEP grant application, and we are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 306A relating to levee infrastructure. Mr. Bender.
Senate Bill 306 is a bill that is related to, but not entirely reliant on, a policy option package request in the Business Oregon's governor's recommended budget. In the governor's recommended budget for Business Oregon, there is a request for $28 million in lottery bonds to provide additional capital to the Special Public Works Fund. The Special Public Works Fund is an existing program within the Infrastructure Finance Authority division of OBDD that provides funding for infrastructure projects throughout the state. What Senate Bill 306 would do is it would expand the allowable uses of the Special Public Works Fund to include a new category of projects, that new category being levee projects or projects to address levees, including repair and review of levees. In the governor's recommended budget, out of the $28 million that is being requested for the Special Public Works Fund, $7 million, if you approved it, would be dedicated toward these levy projects, which would become allowable under the bill. The situation, we asked Business Oregon what would happen if you passed Senate Bill 306 but did not provide the $7 million in the budget. And they indicated that they would use the authority that would be established in Senate Bill 306 and fund a total of two projects during the upcoming biennium, two planning projects, a $500,000 planning project for Sovie Island, or at Sovie Island, and a $2.3 million planning project for the Sandy Drainage District. If you did provide the $7 million, they would fund an additional 18 planning projects and four construction projects, though given the timing of when the bonds would be issued, which would not be until the end of the 2017 biennium, most of these projects would not actually be funded until 2017-19, but they would receive the funds in 15-17 to allow those projects to go forward. Additionally, the bill establishes authority for the Water Resources Department to provide these levy inspections and evaluations, and they are also affected by this. In the materials we provided, we did provide the staff measure summary from this bill, which came to you from the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. We also included a fiscal impact statement, which was essentially indeterminate. After speaking additionally to the Water Resources Department, they've indicated that they would request a position or need a position in order to implement their responsibilities under this bill. And I think that it would be helpful to hear from both agencies as to how they would implement the bill if it passed and what their costs would be.
And I don't know if we have agency people here.
We do.
Okay, excellent. I don't see them indicated as agency people on the.
They have not signed up, but we do have Lynn Schessler from OBDD.
Oh, I thought you were talking about water resources.
Well, they're here.
Okay.
Raquel.
Oh, good. Okay, thank you. All right. Perhaps the most informative way to introduce this topic, because it is one of considerable importance, would be to ask the agency folks to come up. And this is an opportunity for me to thank Lynn Schessler for his leadership in helping to bring this issue forward. Mr. Chesler, if you wouldn't mind, could you comment a little bit about what brings Oregon to this sad state of affairs that we're now suddenly responsible for all these water management devices throughout the state when heretofore there had been partnerships with the Corps?
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Chesler. I'm the Infrastructure Finance Division Director for Business Oregon. I'm not sure what got us to this sad state of affairs. Frankly, what I'm trying to do with this bill and the funding request is respond to the sad state of affairs. Yes, indeed, you've accurately identified that there's been some restrictions on the Corps' activity. Corps' budgets have been reduced, and so now the responsibility for some of these activities, by default, if anybody's going to be responsible, it's going to be the state. And so that's why we've tried to step up and create a program that we can at least get started helping communities identify, one, oh my God, I've got a levy, and then two, hopefully some funding to help them respond to figuring out how big a problem do we have in preparation and for fixing it so that we don't have areas lose their accreditation and be subject to having to pay flood insurance.
Thank you very much. Senator Hanson, then Senator Monroe.
If I may be so blunt, Madam Co-Chair, I think the way we got here is the federal government just reneged and walked away from all the responsibilities.
Mr. Chesler may not want to comment. I would say that seems like a very adequate Cliff Notes summary.
Okay.
Senator Monroe.
Well, Madam Co-Chair, I think it's very appropriate that we're dealing with this bill today. The end of this month will be the 67th anniversary of the biggest levee failure in by the Corps in Oregon history, that being the Vanport flood. I'm the only one old enough to remember it on this panel, but I do remember. I was 6 years old, and it was catastrophic. Loss of life, loss of property. Fourth largest city in Oregon at that time was devastated, totally flooded. So I think, you know, paying attention to our levees and preparing for the fact that not every year is as dry as this one has been, that we may once again have a year like we had in 1948 when there was massive snow in the mountains and days and days and days of heavy rain.
Thank you. That certainly puts this in very pointed perspective. Water resources.
Chair Johnson and Chair Gomberg and members of the committee, for the record, Raquel Rian Sears, Senior Policy Coordinator with the Oregon Water Resources Department. Senate Bill 306 would authorize the Oregon Water Resources Department to provide technical assistance to individuals that own a levee. So basically how I see this working is that the Water Resources Department would be able to provide them with assistance in doing that initial inspection and evaluation to help them understand, first of all, what is the extent of the levee. A lot of folks don't even know that they have a levee on their property, nor do they know to how far it goes on their property. So doing that initial inspection and evaluation and helping folks to understand what's the condition of that levee, what would they need to do, and then what would they need to then do to repair and fix that levee. So they would do that initial kind of scope of work, which would then allow these levee owners to work with a private engineer to do the actual repairs and get their levee up to standards.
Thank you very much. Senator Hanson.
Both of you said a statement that I'm curious about. How in the world would a person not know that they had a levee on their property? That's a pretty sizable movement.
May I give you an anecdotal?
May.
I represent Savis Island, largest freshwater island in the world surrounded by fresh water. And I had a new constituent from the city move out to the island, and he was opining to me that if he could just knock down that berm, he would have a beautiful view of Mount St. Helens. It's the dike! I think it is exposure to the value of water management devices in all forms that informs people's knowledge of whether or not they have a dike on their property.
Okay.
All right. So with that, Mr. Chesler.
Members of the committee, to your point, many of these levees are very, very old. maybe authorized by the Corps of Engineers in the very early years, maybe constructed prior to any time that anybody even had a permit to put something up. My anecdotal story is that DLCD was visiting Oak Ridge and looking at a topographic map and noticed an unusual land formation. Comes out that Oak Ridge has a levee, and nobody in town, at least in city government, was aware of its existence because it's covered with blackberries and couldn't readily be seen to the eye.
Okay.
All right. With that, we'll ask you to stay in the room if you don't mind. And given that everyone that has signed up has indicated their support for the bill, I'm going to call them up in panels of three. Mr. Landauer, Ms. Morrissey, and Mr. Meyer. Mr. Landauer, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Johnson, Gomberg, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here today on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. The Special Districts Association represents approximately 950 districts across the state of Oregon, providing a variety of services to the citizens of Oregon. Our association represents, among others, of course, drainage and water control districts, and that is why I'm here today before you. Our association enthusiastically supports Senate Bill 306. There are several federally authorized levies in the state of Oregon that are the responsibility of special districts and cities. As a result of Hurricane Sandy and Katrina, the Army Corps of Engineers and FEMA have significantly modified their regulations related to levies in order to protect the public and their communities. Certification through the Corps is very important, because if a certified levy fails, the Corps will assist the local jurisdiction in the repair of that levy. If it's not certified, the owner of the levy is responsible for all the repairs. Furthermore, having a certified levy also has an important relationship, as described previously, to floodplain mapping that is undertaken by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Without a certified levy, some communities will be faced with the necessity of purchasing flood insurance, because despite the fact that there is a levy, FEMA likely will not recognize the existence of that levy. Additionally, floodplain development restrictions will then apply and impact development in the immediate area. Levies are oftentimes overlooked or just simply not seen, as described previously by Senator Johnson, as a critical element to the public's infrastructure. Maintaining these levies, let alone meeting the new federal standards, is proving to be a challenge for communities across the state. We remain very supportive of this, and today we have Sarah Morrissey with the Multnomah County Drainage District, who is going presently through a recertification process with the Army Corps of Engineers.
Thank you very much. Mr. Landauer, if businesses or homes exist behind an uncertified levy, what effect do you think that would have on the value of those properties?
Well, Senator Johnson, I think that it would probably be best for Ms. Morrissey to respond to that question. She's very familiar with the interplay between the Corps and FEMA and how this all works, so I think she's a better person to answer.
We'll defer to Ms. Morrissey.
Hi, good afternoon, members of the committee. So to answer that question...
Give your name for the record, please.
Yes, so my name is Sarah Morrissey. I'm a project manager at Multnomah County Drainage District.
And the question.
So how are properties impacted behind a unaccredited levy system? So what we've seen is, if a levy is unaccredited, FEMA, when they do their remapping for the area, will not regard the levy as present and basically map the area as if it were in a floodplain, which is linked to the flood insurance rate maps. So cities are then mandated to, for any development in that area, has to meet flood development standards, and property owners in that area have to purchase flood insurance. It's very difficult also to get a mortgage on that property. It's difficult to sell your home if it is in a floodplain. It has multiple challenges for businesses as well. We've seen examples in Kent Washington, where their business area was mapped into a floodplain, and it completely stalled development for the next 3 years until they were reaccredited. For the district in where I work, North Portland, the Portland International Airport is behind the levee system. If that is not accredited in the future, the airport cannot function.
That's pretty graphic. Thank you. If you'd like to proceed with your prepared testimony.
Yeah, so I'm here to testify on behalf of the different Oregon communities that are going through the certification accreditation process. I present you with a letter of support from these different communities. We have support from the City of Pendleton, City of Reedsport, City of Springfield, the Scappoose Drainage Improvement Company, Savvy Island Drainage Improvement Company, City of Warrenton, as well as the Multnomah County Drainage District, which represents four drainage districts across North Portland. So we've seen this happening across the state. There are more than 300 miles of levee in Oregon. Some are federally authorized, some are not. Many have fallen into inactivity or degraded due to the lack of resources. The land use behind the levees has changed dramatically from primarily agricultural land to now residential or industrial or business land. And communities around the state are learning from each other through this process. So some of the challenges within just the investigation for certification, it varies in cost. So we've had estimates from $22,000 per levee mile up to $80,000 per levee mile just for the certification investigation. So that is not addressing any deficiencies. That is simply understanding the state of the levee and how it protects the districts. Many districts, this exceeds their annual operation budget. For example, Savvy Island, their annual operation budget is $240,000. The cost for the certification investigation is $400,000. In MCDD, levee certifications, because we are an urban area, are around $80,000 per levee mile. So for our project, we're looking for certification is going to cost close to $7 million just for the investigation. This is not for any of the fixes.
I'd like to just take a breath there. This is one diking district that could eat up the entirety of the proposed appropriation, and I put emphasis on that just to give you a sense of the scope of the problem. If you think about coastal Oregon or along the mighty Columbia River, the number of flood management devices that exist there, you begin to see how critical this is. And I think sometimes we think of arid places as not having dikes. And the example that Mr. Chesler gave reminds us that you don't have to be next to the ocean or the Columbia to require diking. Please go ahead.
So in Reedsport is close to beginning their certification process. Their levee protects quite a lot of the city in that area. For Pendleton, they're going to be resubmitting their accreditation package to FEMA in 2016. They assume the work will cost at least $500,000. Springfield recently learned that they have a levee system that needs to go through certification. That system protects businesses like Kingsford and others for that city. So as we've seen, many of the communities that are going through certification accreditation, funding from the state is going to be crucial for their success. These projects are very large in scale, and we're having to meet new and higher federal standards. We've also seen in Washington, California, some projects have been successful in acquiring federal funding when there's tiered funding from local as well as state matches. And so I just would really encourage that this funding become available for all of the different certification projects across the state. Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe you have written testimony. Will you make sure it gets submitted to the professional staff?
Yes.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions? Representative Whitsitt.
I don't have a question. I'd just like to say that one of the more recent failures we had was around Upper Klamath Lake, which took out Highway 140 and cost millions and millions of dollars to repair, and no one had any idea. It was laced with gopher holes, which couldn't be seen. So as in entirety, it looked okay, the levee, but we have tons of levees around that particular lake, which is Oregon's largest lake. So you're right, it happens in desert areas just as easily.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mike Meyer. I'm the vice president of an engineering firm called Cornforth Consultants. We're based in Portland. My firm does a lot of the levee safety studies for diking districts in the region, and I'm here today to express my support for the funding of Senate Bill 306 and in the amendment 306-A2. I traveled down here this afternoon with Sarah Morrissey, who you just heard from. She's with Multnomah County Drainage District. And she and I have been working together on some very large levee certification projects. I'm the engineer that's been doing the work with her. And we have a lot of firsthand knowledge about what the diking districts are facing in the rest of the other parts of the state. Funding for the Senate bill can really help these districts shore up their levee systems and prevent disasters like the Vanport flood in 1948. More recently, the levee failures in New Orleans from Hurricane Katrina. I also happen to be on the board of directors for an association called the American Council of Engineering Companies, and the acronym is ACEC. And ACEC is also a very strong supporter of this bill. There are numerous engineering firms in the region with expertise to address these levee safety issues, firms like mine. You'll hear from Tom Grindland next. He's with another engineering firm. The funding from this bill would generate a lot of interest and competition from qualified firms like ours, the firms that are looking for levee work. And obviously, this brings great engineering jobs for students from Oregon universities as well. There's a lot of talent there. The dollar amount in this bill, $7 million, which we heard earlier, I believe is an excellent start. I think that's going to be enough to get started with and show some good successes. I will say I think down the road we're probably going to need more than that, but we'll come back and visit next time on that. But that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions? Okay, thank you very much. We'll hear from the next panel, Mr. Grindland, Ms. Doyle, and Ms. Snell. Mr. Grindland, before you introduce yourself and start your prepared testimony, I would like you somewhere to weave in for the benefit of the committee what the A2 amendment does.
I will do that.
Thank you.
Again, my name is Tom Grindland. I'm a vice president with an engineering company by the name of West Consultants. We have offices in Portland and Salem. I am a registered professional civil engineer with specialty in hydraulic engineering. I have 35 years of experience in dealing with floodplains, flood risk, and dam and levee safety issues. I have been involved in a number of projects in Oregon and have interacted with various special levee districts, drainage districts, in trying to get a handle on the issues that they're facing and how they could be approached. I am here today to voice my support for Senate Bill 306, in particular Amendment A-2. The levee issue is a large one facing communities throughout the United States. I'm here because I'm a citizen of the state, and I think it's a big concern. Other speakers have noted it has direct impact to our economy, and most importantly, the safety of our citizens, the communities and people living behind these levees, many of which may not even be aware that they're there. The problem with levees has been brewing for a very long time. It came to a head as a result of Hurricane Katrina, when basically FEMA got religion about levees and decided we needed to start looking at these and understand whether they are providing the protection that we all believe they were. Additionally, the Corps of Engineers has had various changes in their procedures as well, where they've not been allowed to address some of these accreditation issues. As a member of the private engineering community, I can tell you that we're available. We have the resources and the skills necessary to do the work that will be required. However, I would also voice support for funding for a position with the Water Resources Department so that they can organize, manage, and understand this problem and provide appropriate direction to legislators such as yourselves. This Amendment A-2 is a brief clarification of the original Senate bill, where basically the language has been altered so that the state is not doing the certification of the levy systems, that the work necessary to do that would be done by the private sector. I think that this is a very important project. It's a very large problem. I think the $7 million that is being talked about is a down payment. It's a start on a project that's facing many communities. Many of the levy districts, as you know, don't know where to go and don't have the resources themselves to address it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Grindland? I have one. Do you think that the certification under the amendment that you're proposing would absolve the state of a certain level of risk management and put it into the private sector company whose professional accreditation and insurance would then be relied upon if there was a failure?
I would say that, obviously, as the private entity doing the work, we would be the first in line for professional liability. So to answer your question, I would say it would absolve the state to some level.
Thank you.
I've got a question.
Senator Hansel.
Once certification of a levy has been been established, absent any, a hurricane or something, what's the normal length of time of that certification remains in effect? How
I believe that the certification effort needs to be revisited on an approximate 5-year cycle. The I believe that if I'm not right, I would ask
excuse me
if you'd reintroduce yourself.
Correct myself.
I'm Mike Meyer with Cornforth Consultants. So when private firms like ours do the certification studies, technically there is no sunset date on that unless there have been major changes to the levy system. The Corps of Engineers can step in at times and do levy certifications also. Theirs has a limit of 10 years.
10 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. One thing with the FEMA program, they had a mandate where they wanted to revisit floodplain mapping on a 5-year cycle as well. However, due to funding, they don't do that. Many of the floodplain mapping efforts have been many years of age, upwards of 10 to 20 years.
One other question for you. Let's assume that this bill passes and the concomitant funding occurs. Are engineering firms generally in a position where they could help act as advocates in the instance where FEMA, by their own admission, have made errors in these maps, and I think have been quite cavalier in saying, mistakes happen. In Tillamook County, the county challenged FEMA on one of their maps and actually went up through the appeal process, incredibly expensive, prevailed. We relied very heavily on outside experts to help us make the case to FEMA that they had misinterpreted their own rules and map. Do you see that as one of the menu of services that you would do on behalf of municipalities or drainage districts, diking districts, if you were retained to provide recertification services?
Definitely. As a hydraulic engineer with many years of experience in dealing with FEMA, I have often actively promoted the truth with FEMA, basically, to define what the most appropriate answer for a floodplain and what true flood risk is.
Thank you. That's comforting.
Yeah.
Okay, colleagues, any other questions? Whatever order.
Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, for the record, Aaron Doyle, on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I'm mostly here to pile on in support of this bill. As I've traveled throughout the state during the interim between the short sessions, floodplain insurance has become a major topic across the state. I've had many conversations with, for example, the City of Enterprise, and then traveled down to the southern coast and had extensive concerns related to their levy recertification. For those reasons, and obviously the amount of planning, investment, long-term safety that is provided by these levies. We support this and the $7 million in funding that would come with it, and having all the resources that we can to bring the issue to bear will help us maintain safety, maintain investment, and maintain insurance. And thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions for Ms. Doyle? Representative Nierman.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So this question could have gone to anybody on the panel, but I just thought of it while you were up there, so you're thinking to answer.
I may turn around.
So the $7 million just goes for inspection of levies then, right? And hopefully most of them pass. But if they don't pass, then there's going to be money needed to fix them, which I assume is going to be way more than it, you know, depending on what the problem is, way more than it's going to be take. So.
I'm going to turn to Mr. Bender and ask him to just repeat what he had said with respect to what the agency would do with the first iteration of money. Some inspection and some grant, but the $7 million isn't going to be nearly enough, and this regrettably is going to be an ongoing responsibility of the state of Oregon, given that our federal partners have not only changed the rules, but in effect abandoned us.
Yes.
This used to be a partnership of certification. And to give you a sense of scale, the Scappoose Drainage District had historically set aside $50,000 roughly to do the periodic reinspections. When the Corps backed away from their responsibilities, the Drainage District came to the city of Scappoose and said, it's going to cost $2 million to fix this. We don't have it. You now all live behind uncertified dikes. So Mr. Bender will tell you the first plan for expenditure.
Thank you. We received information back from the department that with the $7 million of funding, if you were to provide it, they would be able to, they would fund, and this is an estimate, it may not turn out exactly this way, but their best projection is that they would fund 20 projects for planning, which I think would be the certification. I'm not sure if planning would be going beyond a certification or not. And four actual construction or repair projects.
It's a mix. Is that responsive?
Yeah, that's helpful, and I appreciate your indulgence.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle. Ms. Snell.
Thank you. For the record, April Snell, Executive Director with the Oregon Water Resources Congress, Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg. OWRC represents irrigation districts, water control districts, water improvement districts, drainage districts, and other similar entities who happen to provide water for agricultural purposes, and some of them may also have flood control and drainage responsibilities as part of that. We are here also to share our support for Senate Bill 306 with the amended language. I think, as you've already heard, this is something that is a statewide need, and the discussion today has already hit upon some of the fundamental issues we have, is that a lot of the infrastructure that was built around the state 50, 75, 100 years ago was done so with federal and state partnerships, and in particular the federal side of investment in that infrastructure has really went away, and now we're looking at how do we continue to meet our water needs and protect communities from being flooded and do all these things. And as you've heard, it's going to take a large amount of money plus probably a lot of time and patience as we work through these different processes. But I think there are a lot of situations that have already been mentioned, plus others that, you know, as you've indicated, some communities don't even know that there are levees there, and they may not know until one breaches, and then they'll be looking at those. And so I think that this bill would be important for providing some financing, but also providing a way for folks to be able to get some assessment of their levies. And I think it's something that could theoretically work how Water Resources Department currently does dam inspections, which they do around the state for, and they have a classification for high hazard dams, for example, and then it's upon the operator of that dam to get those things fixed. But I think it's something that would be of great value to communities around the state, and really appreciate your efforts on this and be happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions for Ms. Snow? Thank you all three for your testimony and your advocacy on behalf of the bill. While we're still in public hearing, I don't know if anybody has been moved by the spirit of testimony. Seeing none, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 306A. And Mr. Bender, do you have any cleanup comments about this?
I do not.
Okay. Senator Hanson.
Just a statement, Madam Co-Chair, is that, I mean, this is going to be a huge ongoing issue. I dare say, I was just trying to do a quick mental inventory in my district. Every community was built on a waterway of some type, with maybe the exception of Shanico, which was built at the end of a railroad. But it's, you know, we got levees forever on every, we got to address it.
Well, I think Senator Monroe put quite a poignant exclamation point on why we need it with his recollection of Vanport. And committee members, if you are of the opinion that this ought to be a priority in our budget deliberations, I would hope that you would feel compelled to share that with the respective co-chairs. Nothing else before the committee today, Mr. Bender?
No, the committee will not be meeting tomorrow. And we are working on the schedule for next week, and we'll get that information out to you hopefully today, later today or early tomorrow.
Thank you. Any comments for the good of the order? There being none, we're adjourned. We're adjourned. There being none.